Chapter 6. Surprises. A scratching at Swan's door near morning proved to be a timid novice named Setsuko, a stocky girl shorter than Moiraine, who told them that the Ammerlin had ordered all accepted to be at the West Stable before third rise, ready to carry on with their task. By the light of the lamp she carried, Setsuko's pale eyes were bleak with envy. The Arafelin girl already knew that her stay in the tower would end in a few months. Setsuko had talked openly of running away, until a visit to Marian's study taught her discretion, if not wisdom. Bitter as the knowledge must be, she could never reach the shawl, but she must be kept until the sisters were certain she could channel without harming herself or others. Despite that, she still might have flight in mind. Novices did run from time to time, and even the rare accepted who flinched at what lay ahead of her. But they were always caught eventually, and their return to the tower was painfully unpleasant, to say the least. It was much better for everyone if that could be avoided. Another time, weary as she was, Moiraine might have offered comforting words, or a caution. This morning, however, the gong for first rise had already sounded, and it was no more than half an hour to second. They could snatch a bite to eat and reach the stable before third, but only just. Yawning, Moiraine gave Swan a last hug and hurried out into the darkness, wrapped in her blanket, before Setsuko reached the next door and began scratching, trying to wake Shiryam. The child would have to do better. Shiryam slept like the dead. Half a dozen novices carrying lamps were tapping at other doors, ghostly images in the night. At hers, a very tall girl with golden hair spilling down her back offered a sulky curtsy when Moiraine dismissed her. Lysandra would be allowed to test for accepted, but only if her sulkiness could be cured. Likely it would be. When the tower saw a fault in one of its students, that fault usually was cured, one way or another. She washed and dressed hastily, barely taking time to scrub her teeth with salt and soda, and brush her hair into some semblance of order. Yet when she reached the gallery with her scrip hanging beneath the edge of her cloak, the darkness was definitely gray. Swan was already outside, cloaked and ready, talking to a visibly chafing, flame-haired Shiryam, and other accepted were already scurrying to breakfast. "Shiryam says the Aiel really are retreating, Moiraine," Swan said excitedly, hitching her scrip on her shoulder. "She says they're all leagues east of the river." Shiryam nodded and started to follow the others, but Moiraine caught the edge of her cloak. "Are you certain?" Moiraine nearly winced. Had she been less tired, she would have used greater care choosing her words. You learned nothing if you put someone's back up to start. Luckily, the slim accepted had none of the temper that her hair and her tilted green eyes might have indicated. She merely sighed and looked longingly toward the door leading from the gallery. "I had it first from a guardsman who had it from a Shinaran soldier, a courier, but later I was told the same by Seraphella, by Rima, and by Janet. One sister may be mistaken, but when three tell you something, you may be sure they have the right of it." She was an enjoyable companion to pass an evening with, yet she did have a way of making casual statements sound like lectures. "Why are you two grinning like fools?" she demanded suddenly. "I didn't know I was grinning," Swan replied, schooling her features. She still looked eager, rising up on her toes as though to run. "Is not a chance to ride in the countryside worth grinning over?" Moiraine asked. Now, perhaps, they could convince their escort to take them to the camps closest to Dragonmount. She was unsure exactly when she had adopted Swan's view, yet it was her own now. They would find him first. Somehow they would. Grin? She could have laughed aloud and danced. "Sometimes you two are passing strange," Shiryam said. "I'm saddle-sore near to hobbling myself. Well, you can stand here and talk if you wish. I want my breakfast." But as she turned to go, she stopped dead and exhaled in shock. Marian had come onto the gallery in the fading darkness, her vine-woven shawl draped over her arms so the blue fringe almost brushed the floor. She attracted a good many stares from the accepted. Sisters seldom wore their shawls inside the tower except for official occasions. An appearance here by the mistress of novices wearing hers meant someone was in very deep trouble, or else being summoned for testing. A few of the women lingered on the gallery hopefully, while a handful sped off as fast as they could, short of running, no doubt propelled by guilty consciences. They should have known better. All they achieved was to have Maria note them with a glance, and she would dig until she discovered what they felt guilt about. In Kyrian, a gooseherd would have known as much. She paid them no heed now, however, as she glided calmly along the gallery, the accepted she passed rising from their curtsies with regret painting their faces. Shiriam was one of those who lingered, and it was in front of her, Swan, and Moiraine that Marian stopped. Moiraine's heart fluttered, and she struggled to breathe evenly as she curtsied. She struggled just to breathe in the first place. Maybe Swan had been right. Well, she was right, in point of fact. When Marian said an accepted might test soon, it always came within the month. But she was not ready. Swan's face shone with eagerness, of course, her eyes bright. Shiriam's lips were parted in hopeful anticipation. Light! Every last accepted must think herself more ready than Moiraine Domodred did. "You'll be late if you don't hurry, child," the Blue Sister told Shiriam sharply. And surprisingly, Marian was never sharp, even when there was punishment in the offing. When she lectured on your misdeeds while applying switch or strap or the hated slipper, her voice was merely firm. As the fire-haired woman darted away, the mistress of novices focused her attention on Swan and Moiraine. Moiraine thought her heart would pound its way through her ribs. Not yet. Light, please, not yet. "I've spoken with the Armorlin, Moiraine, and she agrees with me that you must be in shock. The other accepted will have to make do without you today." Marian's mouth tightened for an instant before serenity returned to her face. Her voice remained a needle, though. "I'd have kept you all in, but people will cooperate better with initiates of the Tower than with clerks, even White Tower clerks, and the sisters would be up in arms if they were asked to do the task. The mother was right about that much." Light! She must have argued with Tamra to be upset enough to say all of that to accepted. No wonder she was being sharp. Relief welled up in Moiraine that she was not to be whisked off and tested for the shawl immediately, yet it could not compete with disappointment. They could reach the camps around Dragonmount today. Well, one of the camps, at least. They could. "Please, Marian, I..." The sister raised one finger. That was her warning not to argue. And however kind and gentle she was in the general course of things, she never gave a second. Moiraine closed her mouth promptly. "You shouldn't be left to brood," Marian went on. Smooth face or no, the way she shifted her shawl to her shoulders spoke of irritation. "Some of the girl's writing is like chicken scratches." Yes, she was definitely upset. When she had any criticism, however slight, it was delivered to the target of it and no one else. "The mother agreed that you can copy out the lists that are near unreadable. You have a clear hand. A bit overflowery, but clear." Moiraine tried desperately to think of something to say that the sister would not take for argument, but nothing came. How was she to escape? "That's a very good idea, Moiraine," Swan said, and Moiraine gaped at her friend in amazement. Her friend! But Swan went merrily ahead with betrayal. "She didn't sleep a wink last night, Marian. No more than an hour at most, anyway. I don't think she's safe to go riding. She'll fall off inside a mile." "Swan said that." "I'm glad you concur with my decision, Swan," Marian said dryly. Moiraine would have blushed to have that tone directed at her, yet Swan was made of sterner material, meeting the sister's raised eyebrow with an open-eyed smile of innocence. "She shouldn't be left alone, either. So you can help her. You have a good, clear hand yourself." The smile froze on Swan's face, but the sister affected not to notice. "Come along, then. Come along. I've more to do today than usher the pair of you around." Gliding ahead of them like a plump swan on a stream, a fast-swimming swan, she led the way to a small windowless room a little down from the Armorlin's apartments and across the corridor. A richly carved writing table with two straight-backed armchairs behind it held a tray of pens, large glass ink jars, sand jars for blotting, stacks of good white paper, and a great disorderly stack of pages covered in writing. Hanging her cloak on a peg and setting her scrip on the floor by the table, Moiraine stared at that ragged pile as glumly as Swan did. At least there was a fireplace, and a fire going on the narrow hearth. The room was warm, compared to the corridors, much warmer than a ride in the snow. There was that. "Once you've finished breakfast," Marianne said, "come back here and set to work. Leave the copies in the anteroom of the Ammerlin study." "Light, Swan," Moiraine said with feeling as soon as the sister was gone. "What made you think this was a good idea?" "You," Swan grimaced ruefully. "We will get a look at more names this way. Maybe all the names if Tamra keeps us in the job. We could be the first to know who he is. I doubt there could be two boys born on Dragonmount. I just thought it would be you, not us." She breathed a gloomy sigh, then suddenly frowned at Moiraine. "Why would you be brooding? Why are you supposed to be in shock?" Last night, revealing her woes had seemed out of place, a trifle compared to what they knew the world faced, but Moiraine had no hesitation in telling her now. Before she finished, Swan enveloped her in a strong, comforting hug. They had wept on each other's shoulders much more often than either had availed herself of Marianne's. She had never been as close to anyone as she was to Swan, or loved anyone as much. "You know I have 6 uncles who are fine men," Swan said softly, "and one who died proving how fine a man he was. What you don't know is I have 2 others my father wouldn't let cross his doorstep, one his own brother. My father wouldn't even say their names. They're street robbers, shoulder thumpers, and drunkards. And when they've guzzled enough ale or brandy, if they've stolen enough to afford it, they start fights with anyone who looks at them the wrong way. Usually it's both of them together setting on the same poor fellow with fists and boots and anything that comes to hand. One day they'll hang for killing somebody if they haven't already. When they do, I won't shed a tear. Some people just aren't worth a tear." Moiraine hugged her back. "You always know the right thing to say. But I will still pray for my uncles. I'll pray for those 2 scoundrels when they die, too. I just won't fret myself over them, alive or dead. Come, let's go to breakfast. It's going to be a long day, and we won't even have a nice ride for exercise." She had to be joking, yet there was not so much as a twinkle of mirth in her blue eyes. Then again, she truly did hate doing clerical work. No one enjoyed that. The dining hall most often used by accepted lay on the lowest level of the tower, a large room with stark white walls and a white-tiled floor, full of long polished tables and plain benches that could hold 2 women, or 3 at a pinch. The other accepted ate quickly, sometimes gulping their food with unseemly haste. Shiriam spilled porridge on her dress and hurried from the room, proclaiming that she had time to change. She very nearly ran. Everyone was hurrying. Even Katerina all but trotted off, still eating a crusty roll and brushing crumbs from her dress. It seemed a chance to leave the city was not so miserable at that. Swan dawdled over her porridge, laced with stewed apples, and Moiraine kept her company with another cup of strong black tea containing just a drop of honey. After all, the chance that the boy child's name was among those awaiting them had to be vanishingly small. Soon they were alone at the tables, and one of the cooks came out to frown at them, fists planted on her hips. A plump woman in a long, spotless white apron, Laris was short of her middle years and more than pretty, yet she could frown a hole through a stone. No accepted was ever fool enough to come over high-handed with Laris, at least not more than once. Even Swan gave way beneath that unwavering gaze, hastily spooning the last bits of apple from her bowl. Laris began calling for the scullions to bring their mops before Swan and Moiraine reached the door. Moiraine expected the work to be drudgery, and it was, though not so bad as she had feared. Not quite so bad. They began by digging their own lists out of the mound and added those already in a readable hand, which reduced the stack by half. But only by half. If you came to the tower unable to write, you were taught a decent hand as a novice, but those who came writing badly often took years to reach legibility, if they ever did. Some full sisters used the clerks for anything they wanted someone else to understand. Most of the lists appeared to be shorter than hers and Swan's, yet even counting Malin's explanation, it seemed that an astonishing number of women had given birth, and this was only from the camps nearest the river. Noticing Swan scanning each page before setting it to one side, she began doing the same. Without any great hope, yet vanishingly small was not the same as impossible, except that the more she read, the further her spirits fell. Many of the entries were shockingly vague. Born within sight of Tarvalen's walls? The city's walls were visible for leagues, visible from the slopes of Dragonmount. This particular child was a girl, with a Tyran father and a Kyrianan mother, yet the note boded ill for locating the boy child. There were far too many like that. Or, born in sight of the White Tower. Light. The tower could be seen from nearly as far as Dragonmount. Well, from a good many miles at least. Other entries were sad. Celia Pomfrey had given birth to a boy and had left to return to her village in Andor after her husband died on the second day of fighting. There was a note beneath the name in Mirel's flowing script. Women in the camp tried to dissuade her, but she was said to be half mad or more from grief. Light help her. Sad to weeping. And in a colder vein, as troubling as the inexact entries. No name was recorded for her village, and Andor was the largest nation between the spine of the world and the Arith Ocean. How could she be found? Celia's child had been born on the wrong side of the Arinen and too early by 6 days, but if the Dragon Reborn's mother was like her, how could he be found? The pages were dotted with names like that, though usually they seemed to be women others had heard of, so the information might be written in full elsewhere. Or it might not. The task had seemed so simple when Tamra set it. The light help us, Moiraine thought. The light help the world. They wrote steadily, sometimes putting their heads together to decipher a hand that really did resemble chicken scratches, took an hour at midday to go down to the dining hall for bread and lentil soup, then returned to their pens. Elida appeared, in a high-necked dress even redder than that she had worn the day before, to stride around the table and silently stare over first Swan's shoulder and then Warain's, as though to study their writing. Her red-fringed shawl was richly embroidered with flowered vines, flowered and, more fittingly, barbed with long thorns. Finding nothing to criticize, she left as abruptly as she had come, and Moiraine echoed Swan's sigh of relief. Other than that, they were left alone. When Moiraine dusted her last page with fine sand and poured it into the wooden box sitting on the floor between the chairs, the hour for supper had come. A number of boy children had been born yesterday. The birth had to come after Gitara's foretelling, but not one had seemed remotely possible for the child they sought. After a night of troubled, restless sleep, she needed no urging from Swan to return to that small room rather than joining the other accepted hurrying to the stables. Though some were not hurrying so quickly today, it seemed that even a trip outside the city could pall when all you had to do was sit on a bench and write names all day. Moiraine was looking forward to writing names. No one had told them not to, after all, and they had been wakened by the sounds of the other women getting ready, not by a novice bringing orders to ride out with the rest. As Swan often said, it was easier to ask forgiveness than permission, though the tower was rather short on forgiveness for accepted. Yesterday's gleanings were waiting on the table, an untidy stack as tall as the first had been. While they were sorting out the readable lists, two clerks walked in and stopped in surprise. A stout woman with the flame of Tarvalen worked on one dark sleeve, her gray hair in a neat roll on the nape of her neck, and a strapping young fellow who looked more suited to armor than to his plain gray woolen coat. He had beautiful brown eyes and a lovely smile. "I dislike being set a task only to learn someone else is already performing it," the woman said acerbically. Noticing the younger clerk's smile, she shot him a cold stare. Her voice turned to ice. "You know better than that if you want to keep your place, Martin. Come with me." Smile sliding away in worry and red-faced with embarrassment, Martin followed her from the room. Moiraine looked apprehensively at Swan, but Swan never stopped sorting. "Keep working," she said. If we look to be busy enough... Her voice trailed off. It was a small hope, if clerks had been assigned the work, but it was all they had. By a matter of minutes, they managed to be copying names by the time Tamra herself walked into the room. Wearing plain blue silk today, the Amarlin was Aes Sedai calm, made flesh. No one would have thought that her friend had died right in front of her only the day before yesterday, or that she was waiting on a name that would save the world. Tamra was followed closely by the gray-haired clerk, who wore satisfaction on her face like too much rouge, and young Martin stood behind her, smiling over his shoulder at Moiraine and Swan. He really would lose his place if he did that too often. Moiraine bobbed to her feet and offered her courtesies so fast that she forgot the pen in her hand. She felt it twist, though, and winced at the ink stain it left, a black smear spreading to the size of a coin on the white wool. Swan was just as quick, but much more steady. She remembered to lay her pen on the tray before spreading her skirts. Calm, Moiraine thought. I must be calm. Running through the mental exercises did little good. The Amarlin studied them closely, and when Tamra scrutinized someone, the most thick-skinned and insensitive felt measured to the inch and weighed to the ounce. Moiraine only just managed not to shift in unease. Surely that gaze would see everything they planned, if that could be graced with the name of plan. I had intended you to have a free day, to read or study as you chose, Tamra said slowly, still considering them. Or perhaps to practice for your testing, she added, with a smile that did nothing to lessen her scrutiny. A long pause, and then she nodded slightly to herself. You are still troubled by your uncle's deaths, child.
I had nightmares again last night, mother.
True, but once more they had been of a baby crying in the snow and a faceless young man breaking the world anew even while he saved it. The steadiness of her own voice amazed her. She had never thought she would dare give an Aes Sedai answer to the Amarlin seat. Tamra nodded again.
Very well. If you think you need to be occupied, you may continue. When the boredom of copying all day overcomes you, leave a note with your finished work and I will see to replacing you.
Half turning, she paused.
Ink is very difficult to remove, especially from white cloth. I won't tell you not to channel to do it. You know that already.
Another smile, and she gathered up the gray-haired clerk, herding her from the room.
No need to look so indignant, Mistress Wellen, she said soothingly.
Only fools upset clerks. Their mistakes, accidental or on purpose, could cause too much damage.
I'm sure you have much more important tasks than...
Her voice faded to a receding murmur in the corridor. Moiraine lifted her skirt to look at the stain. It had spread to the size of a large coin. Ordinarily, removing it would require hours of careful soaking in bleach that stung your hands and offered no guarantee of success.
She just told me to use the power to clean my dress, she said wonderingly.
Swan's eyebrows attempted to climb atop her head.
Don't talk nonsense. I heard her as well as you, and she said nothing of the sort.
You have to listen to what people mean as well as what they say, Swan. Interpreting what others really meant was integral to the game of houses, and put together, Tamra's smile, the cast of her eye, and the phrasing she had used were as good as written permission. Embracing the power, she wove air, water, and earth exactly so, laying the weave atop the stain. Just because accepted were forbidden to channel to do chores did not mean they were not taught how. There was no such prohibition for sisters, who frequently traveled without a maid. The black smear suddenly glistened wetly and began to shrink, rising onto the surface of the wool as it did. Smaller and smaller it became, until it was only a small ebon bead of dried ink that fell into her cupped palm.
"I might keep this as a memento," she said, setting the black bead on the edge of the table.
A reminder that Swan had been correct. There were times when the rules could be broken.
"And if a sister had walked in?" Swan asked wryly.
Would you have tried to tell her it was all part of the game of houses?
Moiraine's face grew hot, and she released the source.
I would have told her... I would have... Must we talk of this now? There must be as many names as yesterday, and I would like to finish before supper is done.
Swan laughed uproariously. You might have thought the redness of Moiraine's face was a fool's paint.
They had been writing above an hour when Moiraine came to an entry that gave her pause. Born in sight of Dragonmount, it said, which was as ridiculous as saying in sight of the tower. But Willa Mandare had given birth to a son west of the river, and on the day of Gitara's foretelling. She copied the entry slowly. Raising her pen at the end, she did not dip it in the ink jar or look for the next name in Elid's spiky hand. Her gaze rose to the ebon bead. She was one of the accepted, not a sister. But she would be tested soon. Billy Mandare could have been born on the riverbank and his mother still have been inside of Dragonmount, but nothing Elid had written indicated how far the camp she had gone to was from the mountain, or how close. The earlier entries just said, born in Lord Elisar's encampment outside Tarvalen. The white page in front of her was only half filled with her writing, but she drew another blank sheet across the table and copied the particulars for Billy Mandare. A humble name, if he was the one. But it was more likely the dragon reborn would be the son of a simple soldier than of a lord. Suddenly she noticed Swan writing in a little leather-bound book, small enough to fit in her belt pouch, while keeping one eye on the doorway. "You have to be prepared," Swan said. Nodding, Moiraine slid the page bearing a single entry across the table to Swan, who carefully copied the information into her little book. Tomorrow Moiraine would bring her own book. The day produced quite a few names of children, born in sight of Dragonmount, or even born near Dragonmount, a number of them on the east side of the Arranin. Moiraine knew she should have expected it. The mountain was the most easily identifiable landmark for leagues, after all. But this was only the second day's list, and they added 9 more boys to Swan's book. Light, how many names would they gather before it was done? There were other surprises. Shortly after mid-morning, Jarna Malari swept into the room, elegant in dark gray silk, with slashes of white at her temples that added to her commanding presence, sapphires in her long black hair, and more around her neck. The silken fringe on her shawl was so long that it nearly touched the floor with the shawl resting on her shoulders. Jarna was a sitter for the gray. Sitters rarely seemed to notice accepted, but she motioned to Moiraine.
"Walk with me a brief while, child."
In the corridor, Jarna strolled slowly in silence for a time, and Moiraine was content to have it so. Light! What could a sitter want with her? A task to be done or a message to be carried would have been mentioned right away. In any case, Accepted did not try to hurry sisters, as well attempt hurrying the Ammerlin as a sitter. The drafts that made the stand lamps flicker did not bother Jarna, of course, but Moiraine began to wish she had her cloak.
"I hear you are troubled by your uncle's deaths," the sitter said at last. "That is understandable."
Moiraine made a sound that she hoped Jarna took for agreement. Aes Sedai answers were all very well, but she wanted to avoid outright lying, if she could. She tried not to strain for every inch, but the top of her head only came to the other woman's shoulder. What did the woman want?
"I fear that affairs of state never wait on grief, Moiraine. Tell me, child, who in House Damodred do you think will ascend to the Sun Throne now that Laemon and his brothers are dead?"
Tripping over her own feet, Moiraine staggered and would have fallen had Jarna not steadied her with a hand. A sitter was asking her opinion on politics? Of her native land, to be sure, but sitters knew more of most countries' politics than their own rulers did. Jarna's liquid brown eyes gazed at her serenely, patiently, waiting.
"I have given the matter no thought, Aes Sedai," Moiraine said truthfully. "I think perhaps the Sun Throne will pass to another house, but I cannot say which."
"Perhaps," Jarna murmured, half-lidding her eyes for the space of the word.
"House Damodred has acquired an ill reputation that Laemon only made worse.
Moraine frowned before she could stop herself, and hurriedly smoothed away the lines, hoping that Jarna had not noticed. It was true. Her father had been alone among his generation in lacking a dark character, men and women alike. The preceding generations had been nearly as bad, when not worse. The deeds done by House Domodred had blackened the name, but she did not like hearing anyone say it.
"Your half-brother Tarangale is denied by his marriage to the Queen of Andor," Jarna went on. "A ridiculous law, but he cannot change it unless he is king, and he cannot become king until it is changed. What of your elder sisters? Are they not well thought of? The taint seems largely to have skipped your generation."
"Well thought of, but not for the throne," Moraine replied. "Anvair cares for nothing except horses and hawking." And no one would trust her temper, far worse than Moraine's had ever been, on the Sun Throne. But that was something she would say only to Swan. And if Inloine gained the throne, everyone knows affairs of state would come a poor second at best to playing with her children. Likely because, in playing with her children, she had forgotten all about the affairs of state. Inloine was a warm and loving mother, but the truth was she was not terribly bright, although very stubborn, a dangerous combination in a ruler. "No one will support either for the throne, Aes Sedai, even within House Domodred." Jarna peered down into Moiraine's eyes for a long moment, reminding her uncomfortably of Malin saying she could not read thoughts. There was nothing for it but to meet that gaze with patience and apparent openness, as well as a fervent hope that Malin had not found a way around the three oaths.
"I see," Jarna said finally. "You may return to your work, child."
"What did she want?" Swan asked when Moiraine returned to the room.
"I am not sure," she said slowly, taking up her pen. That was the first lie she had ever told Swan. She was all too afraid that she knew exactly what Jarna wanted.
By the time they laid the completed copies on the rose-carved writing table that had been Gitara's in the spacious anteroom to the Armorlin's study, six more sitters had come to take Moiraine aside. One from each Aja, all with very much the same questions. Tsutama Rath, beautiful and hard-eyed enough to make Moiraine flinch, put it to her directly. "Have you never thought," Tsutama said casually, toying with the red fringe of her shawl, "of being Queen of Kyrian yourself?" Thus she gained another nightmare to join the babe in the snow and the faceless man. She sat on the Sun Throne wearing the shawl of an Aes Sedai, and in the streets outside the mobs were destroying the city. No Aes Sedai had been a queen in over 1,000 years, and even before that, the few who admitted it openly had fared badly. But if that was the goal of the Hall of the Tower, how could she forestall it? Only by fleeing the tower as soon as she did gain the shawl and staying away until matters resolved themselves in Kyrian. She spent most of that sleepless night praying to be tested soon. Even tomorrow would not be too soon. Light, she was not ready, but she had to escape. Somehow.